Welcome to the Motoring Podcast, your weekly discussion of motoring news. This is episode 61 on Tuesday, the 6th of September, 2016. Hello, I'm Alan.
Hello, I'm Andrew. And be warned, everyone, he's had a lot of coffee.
I have had quite a lot of coffee today, yes. It's just the wonders of Scandinavia.
Rattle through some stories quite quickly.
Well, I need the boring
for a change.
Before that, there's something that I meant to say to you before, which is, of course, this is as close as we get to happy birthday.
For recording,
not for release, yeah. Episode zero was the 8th of September last year, so almost our recording anniversary on Thursday. So happy 1 year
of
recording this stuff. So.
Thank you for sticking up with me for a year.
Yeah, I know, it's
or
been hard going.
With me.
Yes, both. As long as they say sticking up for you, then it's just fine.
Yeah.
Anyway, never mind the whole last year. We've got some follow-up from the last couple of weeks, haven't we?
Yes.
And it starts off with, I told you so. Land Rover have released the first official picture of the new Discovery. And it looks like a fat, corpulent Discovery Sport.
Mm-hmm.
The picture they've released shows the previous four generations of Discovery and the new one. And we have the various levels of rugged, hard-working-looking vehicles, and then we've got this thing at the front that looks like a footballer's plaything. So,
I'm worried about this. I've been wondering about this. Do we call this the Discovery now because the Discovery is its own particular brand, whereas Range Rover is its own particular brand?
I don't know. I don't know. There's nothing that says anything about it.
Because I've seen some people still saying the Land Rover Discovery, but then does that make the other one the Land Rover Discovery Sport, which starts to get very clunky?
Yeah. I don't know either. The thing is, it looks just like the Discovery Vision, a concept that was unveiled in Paris a couple of years ago, and which everyone said was kind of bland and uninspiring, and it looks just like what's come out. It's bland and uninspiring. So I don't really want to go into that because we spent quite a long time on it last week and I was a bit worried about that. And I saw the pictures this week and thought, no, actually, I think we were right. So sadly.
And it's going to be costly.
It starts at 50-odd grand, doesn't it?
Yeah,
I've just closed the tab.
They reckon the starting price is going to move up from the 47,500 that it is now, closer to the Range Rover Sport, which starts at 62,300.
Yeah, I saw 50-something.
So at that point, do people then go, actually, I'll have a Range Rover Sport, or, you know what, I might as well get a Range Rover?
Shogun!
Well, my opinion is
Land Cruiser.
Save lots of money by a top-of-the-range Shogun. I'll be quite happy, thank you very much.
Yeah, I think some of the Japanese brands will be rubbing their hands with glee at this. Well, they certainly should be, anyway.
Good luck to Land Rover, because, you know, we are fans of what they do generally on this show, which I think has made the disappointment in this model the harder for us.
It is, yes.
I think that's why we're being particularly harsh on it. Or seemingly particularly harsh, because I'm really disappointed in the looks of this. In case people hadn't picked that up in the last three shows.
The thing is, it may well still be able to... We could be being completely unfair. May well be able to still climb to the top of a Scottish mountain. It may well still be able to tow 3.5 tonnes. And it may even still be able to do both at the same time.
Well, it is. It is going to do all
that. Terrible.
We're
going purely on looks.
Yeah, it is going to do that. It is going to be able to do that, but we're just talking about the looks of it. And anyway,
let's move on.
Let's
go. Come on.
Nice quick one, this one. It's as is my want, or your want. I've got Dieselgate. Or the main Dieselgate this week, which is that a judge in the US has agreed with the settlement that's been proposed between VW and California. Mm-hmm. So that is another box being ticked and line being drawn in sands and under things and people moving on and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, a mere $86 million.
Mm. No, cool. But that's good. And at least it's another one out the way now.
Yeah.
But this is more to make sure that the listener knows that we do keep checking back on these things.
Yes.
Right, slightly connected with Dieselgate. We did mention a while ago about Fiat had been suspected, or people had been claiming that Fiat was using a defeat device, in inverted commas there. And now it's gone as far as the German Transport Ministry has got hold of the European Commission and asked them to investigate it. So this now rumbles on, because the Italian relevant governing body had said, no, everything's fine.
Uh-huh.
So we will have to wait and see what happens when the EU gets involved. I mean, it depends on whether it's the civil servants or the politicians that really get involved in this.
Yeah, it's a curious one there. If you follow the link in the show notes, it'll be to an Autocar article. Curiously, the very last paragraph is quite unusual for Autocar. In the Autocar says it's contacted Fiat for official comment on the accusations, but it hasn't yet offered a response, which is unusual. It's not the kind of thing that normally happens to Autocar. So yeah, we shall find out.
Mm.
More Fiat-related joys. Goodness, it's going to be one of those shows tonight. Is in the US, and it's actually Fiat Chrysler, so it's more, and it's really more Chrysler than Fiat. But the investigation that we mentioned in the past, trying to determine whether or not FCA have been trying to work out if they have been fiddling the sales figures or not, have met a new sort of lead to follow, and that's that it is rumored, it is mentioned that regional sales managers for FCA and US dealers would occasionally get calls from company executives mentioning something called the Unnatural Acts Department, which doesn't actually exist on any org tree, but letting them know that the Unnatural Acts Department was open for business. Which was seen as something of a motivational phrase. So people are trying to the regulators now, the US Justice Commission Department, are trying to work out if this was some kind of sort of semi-coded way of saying that it would be possible that new figures may be available, or ways of working its way through may be possible.
If the phrase Unnatural Acts Department is or does turn out to be code for massage the figures so that they look good, we can't break the streak of mm-hmm. continuous sales increases.
Yeah.
That's an incredibly dumb couple of words there.
Yes, yes it is.
You think you'd pick something else, then... You know, it's not the same as Tesla and their autopilot, but people really do need to be careful and think about the words they are using more. Because it just stands out a mile, which is probably why it's come to the attention of the people investigating.
Yeah, exactly. So if that is the case, then it's going to be a bit icky, but it's still very much being... Nothing is decided or confirmed. It is still very much under investigation right at the moment. So let's not make sure we don't jump to any conclusions there.
No, quite agree.
So, cool.
Right, Mitsubishi. Now, if we remember, they announced in Japan that they had been giving the wrong, or the way they had calculated miles per gallon for their K cars mm-hmm. or the micro vehicles in Japan had not been done as per the test regulations, due to where they were positioned, apparently. So they had used software and averages and stuff like that and come up with figures that actually turn out to be incredibly close to what the real ones, the real miles per gallons are following the test regime. However, Mitsubishi have now been raided by Japanese authorities because it's been reported that there's more vehicle models that have been sort of caught up in this scandal. So now the Japan's transport authorities want to find out exactly what's going on. So again, as with all these raids, we will, when we know more, we will report back. But it does nicely give us the opportunity to go raid, when in fact they knocked on the door, were allowed in, given tea and coffee or whatever, and were given the files they asked for, and then they left.
So, yes.
But it makes a good headline.
It does. It does. A very civilized headline.
But that's it for follow-up this week.
That's fine. Yep. On to new news.
New news.
And as some of you will have noticed, it's the first week of the month, and the first week of the month means not just the list of the week, but the list of the month, and it is... And those are the SMMT figures for last month's sales. Or pre-registrations, as somebody joked to me. So long ago. Good news is that after last month's... that last month's pretty grim rounding error of a rise, then this week it has... this month it has increased 3.3% year on year, as opposed to barely a smidge last month. I can't remember what the exact figures were.
Ding.
Ooh, so early as well. Registrations rose 3.3% in August. That makes a total of 81,640 units and 1.68 million cars sold in the UK to date. Fleet sales have risen 7.7% this month. Private registrations are down 0.2%. So
I think that's the worrying one for me.
I'm tracking private registrations, because it's far easier for people to just decide one way or another, whereas fleet sales will have been penciled in and scheduled for quite some time.
Yeah.
At least a couple of months anyway, so... So there we go. Was another other good news of things of rising figures are that alternative fuel vehicles are up almost a third, 30.8% up on the same month last year.
Excellent. Shall we look at the winners and losers before you do your top 10?
I think that's a very good plan, Mr. Blues.
Okay, so winners this month. And if you regular listeners will know, they need to remember that we are taking a mixture of overall figures and percentages, because sometimes the percentage can look incredibly impressive, like Lotus. At 500%, but that equates to 90 vehicles sold as opposed to 15 in 2015. So we judge between the two for the ones that stand out to us.
So yeah, we'll
start at the top, going alphabetical. Sorry, Alan, what were you going to say then?
I was merely going to say we're not picking via percentage. We're plucking out the ones of interest.
Yes. Yes, it's in a non-scientific manner.
Yeah.
We'll start towards the top and go with Dacia, or Dacia, however we're supposed to pronounce that.
Dacia.
With a percentage change of 97, but actually it's 845 vehicles sold as opposed to 428 in 2015. Mm-hmm. So that's quite a good rise.
Yeah.
Infiniti. 617%, or nearly 618. That's 280 vehicles, which doesn't sound a lot, but in 2015 they only sold 39. So that is a good... Infiniti continuing to gain a bit of momentum, I feel.
I said it last month, I'm going to say it again. I'm seeing more and more and more on the road. And the Q60 is meant to be being properly launched in Paris Show at the start of October. I really hope to see some of those on the road, but they probably won't be as popular as the Q30, QX30.
Yeah, down in the southwest where I've been for the last couple of weeks, I saw quite a few Q30s. Mm-hmm. I was quite surprised, but it was good to see them. It's good to see them.
Mm. Yeah, nice car.
Jeep, 75%. So that means 488 vehicles as opposed to 278.
I see a lot of... I don't want to seem Captain Negative on FCA yet again. I see a lot of rental market Jeep Renegades.
Now, we've got a few private round here, because right. I think we've...
I see quite a few private, but I'm seeing more and more with, like, diesel stickers over on the fuel caps and stuff.
But you travel more than me, though.
Yeah, that's an observation, not a pretty...
Not scientific. No. Kia had a good month, 81%, mm-hmm. So that's 3,849 as opposed to 2,123. I wonder, it would be interesting to know what the models are, but I would presume, what's the new SUV that came out?
Sportage everywhere.
Yeah.
That's what I keep seeing.
I keep tripping over them almost. They're doing very well for them. So well done there. Land Rover continuing to do well, nearly 45%. So that's 1,500 vehicles as opposed to just over 1,000. Mercedes-Benz, 17%. So that doesn't sound that impressive. However, it's 4,600 vehicles as opposed to 3,900.
I'd tell you which models I keep noticing, but I can't tell the difference. Sorry. Too much.
Nissan had a decent month, nearly 11%. So they're up to 3,500 from 3,100. Renault, which surprised me, Renault 43%, so that's 2,400 from 1,700. And Seat, good to see Seat having a good month, 34%, so that's 1,800 up from 1,300. Mm-hmm. Do you want to take the doom and gloom ones?
I'll do doom and gloom. There are a couple here. Citroën are down a bit, they're down almost 10%. They've not quite as many, 2,600 instead of 2,900 cars. That's in comparison to DS, by the way, who are up 23%, 29%, almost 30% on there. So there's a little bit of balancing out there for Citroën DS. Of course, there are many, many now historic DS models nowadays. Fiat, despite Jeep's rise, Fiat are down at 15.36%. Jaguar, now this is the first time I've seen a drop in Jaguar sales for quite a while now. I can think of down 13.64%, which is weird. We don't have the breakout of what Jaguar sales are for fleet, for of what any of these manufacturer sales are for fleet. Private and business, but it'll be interesting to just see what the balance is there. If that's part of that drop in,
it would be interesting to know that.
Yeah,
because business took a big drop as well.
They did. Yeah, it's really only fleet that's gone up.
Yeah,
Mazda down 13% or 12.5%.
Is that because the sun hasn't come out?
It could be. Well, no. I was really upset, actually, the last few days. I have had to drive more than 20 miles at a time with the flipping roof up. It's been very depressing. First time in months. Mitsubishi, sadly, down 39% again. I don't think people are renewing the Outlander quickly enough, their Outlander BEVs quickly enough. Mm-hmm. I think... such a strong year last year, it's blooming difficult.
But again, if business is taking a drop, FEV would appear to be a prime target, wouldn't it?
Well, if the cars are on a 18-month, 2-year cycle, you see, there's going to be a dip before the next round of those same fleet deals come around for renewal again. Yeah. Sadly, Volkswagen down 25%. Youch.
Now, do we think that's Dieselgate really beginning to bite?
Or is it just fluke?
Don't know. We'll have to see whether that's a trend.
There's been nothing new... I'm thinking back. There's been nothing really new from Volkswagen for the last few months. So I don't think there's anything to just push that. I think it's worth watching in case it's a trend.
Mm.
I don't want to read too much into it and be no, it's, all it's one terrible. Month, it could it? Just it's 1 month and it's generally been stable.
Yeah, they've been so it might just, they've been okay considering.
I can't remember if of course August last year. I've just noticed a glaring typo on this sheet. August last year may have been particularly strong. So you just don't know. You know, it's tricky. We're not smoothing it right the way across. So far, I mean, I suppose generally Volkswagen are down 10% year to date. Anyway, so those are the winners and losers in there. Should we move on to the top tens?
Go on then.
Oh, amazingly, I would have guessed most of these. So the top 10, starting at number 10 with 1,491 sales, is the Nissan Qashqai. Number 9, the Ford Kuga. Number 8, the Kia Sportage. Number 7, with 1,762 sales, there's not a huge difference between 10 and 7, is the Vauxhall Mokka. Only three cars ahead is the Volkswagen Polo at number 6. The Volkswagen Golf is at number 5. The Vauxhall Astra is at number 4 with just under 2,000 sold, 1,931. Vauxhall Corsa is number 3 with 2,393. The Ford Focus is number 2 with 2,519. Number 1 is the Ford Fiesta with, wait for it folks, almost 2,000 cars ahead of the Ford Focus. 4,547 cars.
Where are they going?
I just don't know. I don't know. Do they
We must be running out of parking spaces or something, because where are they going? I mean, well done, Ford. That's fantastic news. I mean, because if you look at the year-to-date between the first number one and number two.
Yeah.
That's
which is
ridiculous.
The Ford Fiesta and Corsa. It's been the same all year. Ford Fiesta, 76,370. Vauxhall Corsa, 50,355 so far. That's more than it's more than 50% above the next one down. You know, it's more than 150% of the number of Vauxhall Corsas sold.
Hmm.
I think my math is correct there. Yeah. year to date, usual suspect really. Fiesta Corsa, Focus, Golf, Qashqai, Astra Polo, Mini, Mokka, and C-Class are all in there. It is a quiet month. That might be something that holds some of these back. Quiet month, of course. Plate change, 1st of September.
Yeah.
Let's see what September brings.
Let's see if everybody does get excited for that and spend money.
Yeah. Well, to be honest... Oh, yeah, there's a bigger percentage of private buyers holding back, maybe, in August. So, because the plate change means more to private buyers than it does to retail business these days.
Yep.
Unless you've got private plates, of course.
Yes.
So, anyway, speaking of new cars, do you want to tell us about the new Skoda Kodiaq?
Well, yeah, we've just talked about how disappointed we are in one 7-seat SUV at probably... £50,000 plus, and Skoda have revealed their first ever 7-seater, the Kodiaq, spelt with a Q. And that's going to start from £22,500. Now, I would imagine the interior will be a little bit Spartan, but if you need a 7-seater...
It's a lot of car for the money, isn't it?
Oh, wow. I mean... okay, I'm not... blown away by the design, I have to say. I'm not overly keen by the back end. That looks a little bit like a Mark 1 X5.
It's a 7-seat SUV about £22,000, Andrew.
Yeah, I mean, the problem is the pictures, most of the pictures we've seen up to date are all white, so that never helps these big vehicles.
No.
Never helps their looks, apart from my bias of hatred against white vehicles.
The clearest example of that has to be the Maserati Levante, which looks great in anything but the launch white.
Hmm. But 22.5 grand.
Mm.
That's very compelling to look towards it. Because we know it's going to be well built. We know it's going to be nice on the inside. I mean, the pictures of the interiors, I presume that's top of the range spec, the way they've got the design on the seats and stuff. But they look really comfy. There looks to be loads of space. You know, you're picking out the VW parts bins, so the stuff's going to work. And it's got a push button to start the engine.
That's all the cool cars have these days. So it's starting around 22.5, mid-spec 26.5, and top-end model with the 7-seat option rising to over 35 grand. So it may well be that your basic lowest model 22.5 grand one isn't necessarily available with the 7-seat, but I'd be quite surprised if that's the case. But yeah, it's up against things like the X-Trail, the Kia Sorento, and the Hyundai Santa Fe. So that's looking to be a kind of quite a hotly contested little market there.
Mm. It is. It is.
That. Ooh, maximum towing capacity of 2.5 tons. That's going to be popular with the caravan towers.
Yep, they'll be happy with that. Mm. People upgrading from their Yetis.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Well, it's according to the Autocar, the Yeti is of course due to be replaced. The trouble with the Yeti is they don't seem to have had nearly enough of them for the UK market.
No, it doesn't really need replacing. It just needs enhancing a little bit, I think, probably.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, it's super popular.
I think that looks great. But yes, no, I mean it's a handsome look, but it's a massive 7-seater, so you know it's difficult to hide certain things on it. You know, mm-hmm. It is going to be a big lump of metal, no matter what you do. But you know, we are fans of the Skoda brand and their design language at the moment. So hopefully, if I get to see one of these, or when I get to see one of these up close and not in white, I will be more impressed.
Now, remind me. Is the Kodiaq, that shares its platform with the new Seat as well, doesn't it? The Seat or something.
Ateca.
Yeah. Ateca, thank you. I had it on the tip of my tongue. It shares a platform with that, doesn't it? So if you're not a huge fan of the Skoda looks, then maybe the Seat looks are going to be the ones for you. But once again, it's going to be yet another competitor into that now busy little marketplace there, I think.
Yes. It's... Okay, but that price, I'm just gobsmacked by the price. Well, no doubt that will sell well for Skoda, because they seem to sell well.
I think so.
Right, should we move on to our motorsport of choice?
Our motorsport
of choice. If I can turn to our motorsport correspondent, yes. Alan.
I join you from the pits here. So motorsport choice, of course, is Formula E. We're not talking about Formula One and its possible sale. We will leave that to people who are familiar with the matter. These days, yes, I agree. So Audi has officially announced via a tweet from the Audi Sport Twitter account that it is now officially going to be involved in Formula E. Those of us who have maybe followed Formula E a little bit more closely will have realised for a while that Audi has been the team Abt Schaeffler Audi Sport for quite some time, and now it is officially being renamed, and I can't find a new name. But essentially, they are now overtly involved in Formula E, as opposed to being quietly, in the background and sort of keeping an eye on Formula E to see just how it did, before sort of jumping in full whack. Which is interesting.
It's not a surprise, though, is it? Sorry to cut you off there, but it's not a surprise following VW's seismic shift away from combustion engines towards electrified vehicles, that they are more overtly involved in anything to do with electric vehicles. So, the motorsport being at the top of it, I think as this race series gains more publicity and more fans and all the rest of it, they've got to have their badges shown.
Yeah, well, ABT have long been associated with Audi as race team and also as providing sort of tuning parts for Audis and Volkswagens. So even from the start, it came as no particular surprise whenever the first official sponsors were unveiled that Audi and Volkswagen stop it. That Audi and Volkswagen were involved in it. I was definitely trying not to. Were involved in it. And they were they wearing Volkswagen badges? I cannot remember. Last season they may have been. So to be honest, this is not a great big surprise at all. So yeah, it's good, but it's great. It means that Audi and Volkswagen are joining. I'm now trying to think which other motor manufacturers are in there, but definitely DS in there. A Faraday Future. Many of these other. I'm going to say real car brands. You'll notice at the start of season one of Formula E, there were no established motoring brands that really involved directly right from square one. I mean, it was
people like Virgin Racing and things like that, wasn't it? It was more.
It wasn't even Virgin to begin with, but yeah.
It was more brands rather than,
the only one,
rather
than
manufacturers. It was just brands involved.
The exception was Renault.
Of course.
Yeah, I knew there was an exception in there. I couldn't work out what it was. But yes, it was. It was yes with the espresso thief, Monsieur Prost, and So Renault were in there from the start. So this is them sort of joining Renault DS, and getting in there. There has been another piece of Formula E related news as well. Which is that next season, the broadcast here in the UK is changing from ITV and mercifully, I think. I don't know. ITV gave pretty good coverage, to be honest, but it's actually moving to Channel 5 next year. So at least it's going to continue to be free to air.
Yeah, I thought it nicely complemented ITV. They were making a motorsport channel, really, weren't they?
But they were a bit, yeah. It was good because it fitted.
You knew
in.
Where to go.
Yeah.
Hopefully, Channel 5.
I cannot remember the last time I watched anything on Channel 5, so it'll probably bring me to Channel 5.
Yeah, hopefully they do a decent job.
Yeah. Totally.
Mm.
Yes. This brings us to that time of the show when I do the podcast equivalent of donning a punty bear suit and shaking a bucket in your faces. All we ask of you, rather than your cash, is a few moments of your time to leave a star rating and review for us by the podcast playing platform of your choice. The most popular and powerful podcasting platform of all is iTunes. So, if possible, a 5-star rating would be appreciated. They are hugely, hugely influential. It only takes you a few moments, and it means a lot to us, making us more visible to potential new listeners. Similarly, on other podcast apps such as Stitcher, Downcast, Overcast, and the like, a rating means a lot. So, thank you very, very much. I didn't realize there was quite as much alliteration in that as I wrote it earlier on. But but please, chaps, a rating, a star thing.
And chapesses.
And chapesses, yes. Yes, absolutely. A rating and a...
God, it's not a week goes by without you alienating some portion of our potential audience, Alan. Well done. At least it wasn't by an accent so far. You know?
Yeah. It's a skill, you know. I've been practicing my Marconi all week, I'll have you know. So, please, guys, a rating is great. If you've already left a rating, then, of course, telling a mate and subscribing them, even on the QT without them knowing, is absolutely fantastic. And thank you. Thank you very, very much. Moving on. Andrew.
Yes, there's an article I stumbled across. It was on Top Gear's website, written by Paul Horrell. And it's talking about real-world fuel consumption. Now, there is a company called Emissions Analytics, and they're based in Britain. And they do this new comprehensive, and sounds like the most accurate measurement for on-the-road testing so far. And they're called EQUA, I presume. EQUA, so I'll call it EQUA.
that works.
They have a set road route that they take in the south of England, and they what they do is they emulate the speeds and the style of driving of an average driver, it says here. So it's not on a rolling road, and it's not by someone who is feather-footed. If you look at the picture, because the link to this article will be in the show notes, as always, but there's basically a pipe stuck into the exhaust pipe that goes to some computery bits that goes up and across bars and is stuck on the back of the car and looks quite clunky, but apparently allows for the most accurate way that these things can be actually recorded and registered. So in the article, there's links to their website where you can find the actual breakdown of every vehicle and all the rest of it. But in Paul Horrell's article, there is a couple of extracts which are quite interesting, because they talk about the biggest gaps is one, and it's the smallest gap in the other. So if we start with the smallest, this will be nice, first of all. It's amazing that there's actually improvements, or that by doing the real world, they get better results than the testing in laboratory conditions. For example, the Jaguar XK is...
Well, it's 11%.
No, sorry, I'm getting that the wrong way around. No, the Aston Martin is better. Sorry. I've read the wrong... Oh, dear. I haven't had the coffee you've had, you see. That's the problem.
Nobody's had as much coffee as I've had today.
The Aston Martin Vantage is has an official MPG of 20.5, but following the EQUA test, it comes out at 21.5. So that's all right if you can afford an Aston Martin Vantage and want to drive around at 20 to 22 miles per gallon. But there are, yeah, the other end of that list there, though, Jaguar XK, it's a drop of 11%.
There is something worth pointing out on this. It's not just the name and the makes and the models. It also points out the engine size, the output, how many driven wheels, whether it's petrol or diesel, what transmission type it is.
Yep.
So it's the Vantage manual which is getting that. But what's really interesting about this list is that I'm going to let you folks at home work out which one is the odd one out from this list. Aston Martin Vantage, Nissan 370Z, Porsche Cayman, well, there's two odd ones out, Kia Sportage, Mazda MX-5, Toyota GT86, Subaru WRX STI, Volkswagen Tiguan, Porsche 911, and Jaguar XK. So, 8 out of 10 of those, you're not going to buy them because of the fuel economy. That's the curious thing about this. But the Sportage four-wheel drive diesel automatic and the, lost it, Volkswagen Tiguan four-wheel drive diesel manual, 2-litre 140 brake, you know, they're both coming within 11% of what the official MPG is, which is pretty impressive. But everything else is a car that you're not that bothered by the MPG. If it gets good MPG, then that's a win. But it's not going to be your primary purchase.
No, that's not a focus, is it?
Yeah.
But at the other end of the scale, where there's the biggest gaps, I think you are looking at cars for their fuel consumption.
One would think so, yeah.
Particularly if we run through the list. I'll just run through the list here. quickly. I won't go into all the details of it, but the Fiat 500, a 0.9 engine. I think I will do the engines, actually.
That's the twin air, I think. Is
Ford Fiesta 1 litre, Ford Focus 1 litre, Smart 4 for 0.9, Fiat Panda 0.9, which will be the twin air, I think, again. Toyota Yaris 1.5, Mini Hatch 1.5, the Alfa Mito 0.9, Peugeot 308 1.6, Volkswagen Golf 1.6.
It's worth mentioning that the Yaris is the Yaris Hybrid, by the way.
Oh, yes. Yes, sorry. It is. Yeah, that is worth saying. But if we go to the bottom of the list with the best-worst gap, which is the Volkswagen Golf 1.6, mm-hmm. with 110 PS. So presume we don't use BHP anymore. Two-wheel
drive. No, it's a metric horsepower.
Okay. Two-wheel drive, diesel, manual, should have 88.3, has 53.
Yeah, which is still respectable, more than respectable, you know, for a 1.6 litre hatchback, but it is 40% down on the official. Yeah.
But if you look at the worst.
The worst, the Fiat 500 Twin Air is the worst, and its official is 70.6, and its real world is 39, which is a drop of 45%.
But if you're buying that because, oh, look, a tiny engine, that'll be economical, you'd be a bit miffed.
It's not even tiny engine. It's like, oh, look at the MPG thing. Mm. And you don't, you think, well, I'm never going to get 70.6.
Yeah, yeah, no one thinks
but,
that.
But, you know, if I get 50 to 60, I'll be fine. Yeah.
Yeah, that should happen. No.
So 39 is a fair drop, but I think I feel that rather than highlighting an issue with these vehicles, it highlights an issue with the original test.
Yes, it does. We all know that the test is not fit for purpose, I think is the right way of putting it.
It has a flaw.
Yes.
But it's, I don't know, I find it interesting. It's an interesting article. It's worth people taking 5-10 minutes of their time to have a little bit of a read through and make up their own mind on stuff, but it's a good one, that actually. I do like that. It's quite interesting.
Mm. Right, shall we move on then?
Yes, let's. So next one is we love a good autonomous vehicle story on here, and so the city of Lyon have given us a good one. They are running two shuttle buses in a year-long trial on public streets. It's a 1.3 kilometer stretch of road in the Confluence part of the city. There's 10 stops on this little route, and it should take about 10 or so minutes for people to, you know, to go from one end to the other, give or take a bit with the traffic. What's notable about this, of course, and I've already given it away when I started, is that what they're using is autonomous vehicles. Okay, they're going to be using the Navya Armor bus, which is a French... I'm going to say French designed, although I know it's not entirely French designed, and built... autonomous bus, which actually is used in quite a lot of places around the world. So whenever we were talking recently about buses elsewhere in the world, then and how they were going a little bit on the slow side, well, then actually it was Navya Armors that were there as well. They're used quite on a lot of they're used on a lot of sort of closed sites and stuff across France. What's really nice about this story isn't just that it tells us all about the setup in Lyon, which will be free for the duration of the trial, by the way, and will have a conductor aboard, an employee of Keolis Lyon, will be on every bus and will be able to override the vehicle's computer if it's necessary. I will be amazed if those buttons are ever pressed, to be honest. So... So yeah, so they're out there. You can try them. It is free to try them if you happen to be in Lyon and you're interested in trying one. Then in the Confluence part of the town, these should be running back and forth. And I think they do wireless charging as well, I think.
Right, they're not a looker, are they?
They're all right.
I mean, it's difficult to make a bus look attractive, but...
Angry industrial.
It is angry. They've got the angry eyes.
Hmm. They do a bit. But there's what's interesting in there, I'd recommend if you follow the link in the show notes to Connexion, which is an English language newspaper, an English language kind of French newspaper, magazine, journal, which is published every 2 weeks, then there is a whole bunch of films in there. I'd recommend scrolling down to the one at the bottom, the Navia Armor, which is running around as a shuttle bus in one of the EDF nuclear sites. It's quite interesting down the bottom. But there's plenty of watching in there, and it's quite interesting just to find out a bit more about the buses and some of these vehicles. So yeah, I thought that was interesting.
Another week, another obscure website Alan visits regularly.
Connexion's really good. I'm going to defend that one.
Good. Right, newspaper. Let's move on. Audi again. This time about an A9 e-tron. Production has been confirmed. So ages ago, the A9 was supposed to come out and was going to be some uber luxury barge thing. But then with Volkswagen changing their focus heavily onto electric vehicles or electrified vehicles, the A9 is now going to be the flagship for the e-tron sub-brand or whatever they want to call it. It's supposed to be having 3 electric motors fitted, which will give a just over 300-mile range, fitted with a lot of self-driving technology that's been developed and is expected to go on sale in 2020. So keep an eye out for an A7 that's been stretched and expanded a little and has the e-tron badge on the front. I would presume.
I would imagine that quite a lot of this technology is going to be shared with the Porsche name I can't remember.
Are they not e-trons as well?
I think it's the same stuff. No, it's not e-trons. It's e-something. But the sort of high-spec Porsche that was the original one, Mission E, that's it. Porsche Mission E. I would imagine that there's going to be a lot of shared technology here and that we're going to see that. Oh, there it is. Partway down this Autocar article. I read all the way through it, no. A lot of it is... the aluminium structure is going to be very different, but the platform and some of the componentry, I'm sure, will be very similar. I'd be amazed if it was...
Well, that'll help keep the cost down really low, won't it?
Yes, I'm sure it will only be... I'm sure it will be a fine competitor. £22,500, like a seven-seater Skoda. Yeah. No, I don't think that's going to happen. It's going to be... This one's going to be a steep one. But it should really... I have a funny feeling about this. Whilst I'm not I'm probably not going to be a big fan of the car itself. I'm going to find it too aggressive and all these kind of things. I think that this is the kind of car which really starts to push the barriers forward.
Yes.
And is going to be... I mean, it's fulfilling my prophecy. Do you remember at the start of this year? We did... we did our
hugely ambitious predictions of the year.
Our hugely ambitious predictions, and one of mine was that this is going to be the year that everyone starts gunning for Tesla. And I'm partly there, and actually, this is the year that loads of people have started gunning at Tesla.
Well, people are gunning for Tesla.
Gunning at Tesla.
Yeah. Tesla makes 70,000 cars at the moment.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I didn't want to turn this into a Tesla discussion.
It's not going to be, because I'm not going to go any further. We've done well for the last 3 weeks.
We have.
But I think it really pushes electrified vehicles because it's got a range of over 300 miles. And I think that's a psychological it's a psychological number. It's a yeah. barrier to get through. If you can say to somebody, it'll do 300 miles on a single charge, as long as you don't drive like a complete loon, that makes it viable to so many people in this country then, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. So I have a copy of last week's Dead Tree edition of Autocar. Just on the desk beside my computer, actually, because I was reading it last night, just to prove that I don't just read everything off the internet, and yes, I do have an Autocar subscription. And they were saying they'd been trying something with a Nissan Leaf, and they'd been trying to do Three Peaks, and they didn't manage it because they were trying to do it in the Nissan Leaf. And they make a point that really the line for usability for this is Steve Cropley that wrote it. Life usability is really 200 miles.
No, but I agree with what you were saying there though about the 200 miles, because there's the Leaf is the new one is going to be doing able to do 200, isn't it? I think
just about. They sort of lost for various reasons. Really interesting article, by the way, by Steve Cropley in there about this, and just saying, you know, there's a whole bunch of things that we just didn't quite get right. But you know, it was we're driving at night, we hadn't realized just how busy the roads would be with 40 mile an hour trucks, and that really hit our range. And because we had a completely moonless night, it was just so dark that really the headlamps couldn't, nothing wrong with the headlamps, but we just couldn't predict the road ahead to try and drive for maximum economy. And a whole load of these things, right? And they just knocked a little bit and just kept knocking bits off the range because of each of these.
Yeah, everything needs these to different work perfectly, things. Doesn't it?
Everything. Well, that was what you said. So they're already planning. They thought that he'd spent the whole afternoon planning all of this and all that, and he reckons that wasn't enough time.
Mm-hmm.
He said there's definitely room for improved planning and just a little bit more luck. But now they know what they're up against this time, they're going to try it again. I don't know if it's going to be the same people trying to do the Three Peaks. I've done the Three Peaks. It's a challenging way to spend 2 days. I felt awesome at the end, though. But that's really interesting. But he comes up with 200 miles, not 300 miles. So 300 miles should be pretty cracking.
Well, yeah, that would sort so many people for their journeys. And, you know, because so many people don't do, they think they do long journeys, but they don't actually.
No, it's the kind of, even my father who does actually do long journey, you know, he's up and down to France and stuff. He reckons that as long as it can get well up the charge, that 80% charge in sort of 40 minutes or so. And can get 250 to 300 miles, he reckons it becomes viable. It can do 300 miles, he reckons that becomes viable for him.
Mm.
Because that times nicely with the stops, he can plug it in, he can have a pee, walk the dog, whatever. And then he's pretty much there for his next one. He can get to the tunnel and he can top up again whilst he's waiting for the tunnel. That gets him down into France. So yeah, so even he of the diesel, you know, 700 mile range diesel is looking at it and going, you know, if it can do 300 miles, I can plug it in, it can work for me.
Mm. Yep.
Which is pretty cool.
It's not going to be long now. I really don't think it's going to be long. And then they really will. I mean, as long as they can be built at a price that allows the manufacturers to make a profit, which mm-hmm. I've seen in various articles and people talking, saying they don't understand how it is. It has to be able to be built at a profit and at a price that we can afford as the consumer.
Yeah, there's a balance between the two.
Yeah. And if that can happen, then I think they will sell a lot.
Well, dumb question, Andrew, but do you want an electric car?
Do I want one?
Yeah, just generally. Ultimately, you don't have a problem with one, do you?
No, I would have one.
I don't mean any of the current ones. I mean in general. No. I'm talking in an abstract.
For me, at the moment, motoring isn't necessarily. It's about getting to places, and it's not necessarily what it. Because I'm generally driving with the family.
Mm-hmm.
It's not often that I'm on my own and I'm on a wiggly bit of road where I can go, actually, let's push this a bit, let's have a bit of fun or anything like that. No, it's generally when I drive nice and smooth and relaxed and get to a place. That's what I'm after. So, yes, it would. If we had two cars, a two-car garage, then one of them electric, yes, makes a lot of sense.
I'm surprised that you found it as hard to answer that. I honestly thought that was a really easy question that you were just going to go, yeah. I'm genuinely surprised. I don't have an issue having an electric car. At all. Electric sports car. Awesome. They're going to come. It's just that everything right at the minute is so they can afford doors and stuff.
Yeah, but you're a person who's got two and a half car garage. For your everyday use,
if they
can hit a 300 mile, I think an electric car is a no-brainer for you.
Yes, I agree.
And I think that will be the point at which you go, you know what, that's my next car. I will get electric next time.
That is perfect. It's the range was one of the things, one of the key things that stopped me buying an i3 instead of the MX-5. Was that problem. It's just like, no, it's at like 120 miles, it was just too tight.
No, that's not really
it was
practical
too
for you. I mean,
tight,
200
was,
is...
200 I could do.
Probably livable. You'd have to make a few compromises, but yeah. I think... But if it was 300, it's suddenly no decision to make.
An issue. Yeah. I need to be able to get from mine to Reading. There you go. That's what those... Orby to Reading. There you go, folks. That's I need to be able to do that and have some spare.
Yes.
That's... And it was just too tight for the i3 before. Yeah, I would definitely.
Right, let's move on because in the last week you have written an article for our website using words and everything.
Yeah. This is called... This is something which has been on the burner in the must finish this off folder for some time, and you may well find there's another couple to come. This is what happens, the difference between me having a deadline and me not having a deadline. A little while ago, I drove a Seat Leon ST Cupra 290 Black DSG, which has a very,
is
very long name.
Is that across the back of it, by the way?
No, it isn't, thankfully. So it's the top of the range, 290 brake horsepower, a dual clutch gearbox version of the estate version of the Seat Leon,
which I think looks cracking.
It's a lovely.
I really do
car.
Like the estate. I do like the hatch Leon. Actually, I think the Leon look, and we've said it before, which is part of the reason we're big fans of the Seat brand. It does look lovely. I think that they've got the Volkswagen overall design language of crisp, sharp edges and lots of lines but not slashes out of the car. I think it suits it very well.
Lines but not slashes is a good way of putting it. I wish I'd thought of that one. So there's my first drive. Opinions on that. I had it for not a huge amount of time. But I did have an awful lot of fun in it. In that
was that the one, the video I've seen
that was the video
at least where you just went wee for the entire drive.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
It was a lot of fun. I needed to, what I couldn't do is Anyway, I didn't manage to edit the video to put that in, and some people get grumbly about the videos because the videos are train of thought rather than anything that has been considered, like the written version. So there may well be the video may well come out at some point, but a proper sensible grown up write up of what that's like to drive, sit in, and poke at, and all these kind of.
God, don't be doing that though. Don't say grown up. People,
it's not really
grown up.
Well, it's not like one of yours where I go around and I go through and test each of the different shopping bag hooks in the boot.
I found a great one recently.
Oh, really? Oh,
yes.
God. Goodness me. So I opened the boot, went, ooh, big boot, took a picture, closed the boot again. I got in, I went, whoa, comfy sports seats, made them right, and went, right, where's the buttons? And I put everything to sport and Cupra mode and FR button. And it was this snarly, snarly thing that... real hooligan stuff. And then
so was it a little bit quick then?
It was a little bit sharpish.
Mm. Did you take it out of... I know you only had a short drive, but did you take it out of Cupra FR Sport?
It took me about 10 minutes to undo all the buttons I'd pressed. Eventually, yes, and then it was just like a very grown-up, sensible car.
So there was a marked difference then between the settings?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, that's good. Good. I know, because you worry sometimes.
Yeah, no, it's a serious difference. It went from, this is quite nice and powerful, this would be nice to... As it, you pull out
your terms there, everybody.
Well, it's what it makes you feel like.
Exactly. No, and that's why I said it before, I liked your videos, is because it was very raw, but it was your actual emotional reaction to driving the cars, and I really enjoyed seeing that.
I will put out the video. Yes, I will put out the video at some point. Anyway, shall we finish off?
Yes, I think we...
Two linked things, I think, fit into the end, finally, this week.
Yes. First one, you probably are aware of this, but if you're not aware, then get ready to subscribe to their channel. But it's Goodwood Revival this weekend. In fact, as I look at the website that I have open here, 2 hours... 2 days, sorry, 3 hours, 26 minutes and 57 seconds. As I do this.
But you're not counting.
Well, Rolex is counting for me. Other watch pieces are available. But that's what's on their website. So, excellent. I can't wait for that. I love watching that.
Yeah, it's good.
And I now have to think of ways to get my family out of the house so I can actually watch it.
Tiffany Dale is getting all excited because he's driving an Austin A35 in at least one of the races. I see that from the Twitters. So there should be lots of proper serious drivers driving really, really fun classic cars.
Well, I know
possibly sideways.
Yes. And I know we've said quietly and privately that we want to draw up a list of events to attend in the next year. And I would quite like the revival or the members meeting early on in the year to be one of those.
Yes, I think that's very sensible.
I think that's a realistic aim. I'm not so sure about the full-on Festival of Speed. I think that would be amazing to go to, but whether I could manage the because of the timings of when it is.
Yeah, it's always tricky when it is.
But the revival or the members meeting, I think, should be something that we talk about off-air as one of our possible events to attend.
Yes, and if yeah, and suggestions of that kind of thing from listeners are appreciated as well, by the way.
So yes, actually, that's a good shout-out, actually.
Think would be a good idea for us to go to, and specifically want us to do, as well as Le Mans, okay, because I know that that's going to come up straight away, then yeah, let us know. All the usual contact points that I'll run through at the end of the show in a couple of minutes' time.
Yeah, but that's not the only thing I found. Friend of the show, Andrew Brady, has written an article. And this is wonderful. I mean, this is one of the things I love about the people I follow and chat to on Twitter. It's, you know, and if you listen to this show regularly, you know we're not all about massive amounts of horsepower. You know we're not all about looking for electric vehicles or autonomous or me with my tinfoil hat. But we look at that. We try and look at all the things that interest us in the motoring world. And that includes, as this article is titled, Instagrammers Who Love Rubbish Cars. And there is a list here. You click through on the show notes to see the Instagram accounts of people who like a bit of a naff car. And considering this is from a man who has just sold his 1983 Austin Metro, I think it was dear to his heart, this article.
He's a man who knows a car when he sees one and then tries to buy it.
Yes, quite. So go through and click the link and then if you are an Instagram type person, follow it through and then enjoy, because there is some lovely vehicles that we've forgotten. So I mean, there's the picture of this Tipo here by Cornish Car Spots.
Mm-hmm.
And that reminds me of the Tipo that my wife had. That was a great car until it saw a puddle and then would stop working. Everything would shut down. But as far as practicality, apart from the not working bit, it was a brilliant car. It had bags of space. You know, it was. You thought, well, great, Fiat could do that. I mean, if only they could make electrics that were waterproof. But if they could do that, why are they where they are now, type thing. But I don't want to go down that route. But yeah, this is it's wonderful. It's so silly, but it's wonderful. And I chuckle a lot going through these Instagram accounts.
I love some of the stuff that's on Instagram that's like that. I've discovered there's two ways you get loads of likes for stuff on Instagram. You either post a Lamborghini or you post, I'm flicking through our own one here, you post a picture of a Citroen Visa sitting in the street in a French town, and everybody just goes, that's amazing, I love that. So you get both extremes. Instagram's fantastic for that kind of stuff, so yeah. What have I you've now got me looking through what I've posted recently.
Well, I liked your Veycross.
Oh, that's an oldie, that one. Yeah. From the Yaris picture from the other day. Renault Twingos. Mark III Supras. Yeah, loads of fun stuff. So Instagram's great for that kind of thing. If you don't use Instagram, if you feel it's one social media thing too far, I can understand that. But it's quite nice because it's kind of relaxing. And we post at least one picture a day.
Mm.
By we, I mean I.
Yes, I'm not as active on Instagram as I perhaps should be.
Yeah,
time.
I do it because I say I do it. I say I'm going to do it, and it's a target for the podcast. I do it. Anyway, that's us for this week.
I think it is.
Lots of stuff, kind of covered. Lots of interesting, varied show this week, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, just to wind up in the usual fashion, don't forget that between now and next week, you can give us any feedback and share your show. Oh, sugar.
Share their shirts?
Yeah, no. Share your thoughts with the show at Motoring Podcast on Twitter and Instagram, on Facebook, and on the contact page of motoringpodcast.com, the hub of all our activities. Please don't forget to leave a review and rating on iTunes or however your podcast app lets you do such a thing. It really does matter. Andrew, best way to get in touch with you?
Via Twitter, where I can be found if you search for @crackwindscreen. And Alan, if people want to talk to you personally rather than just the podcast and website?
Then it Twitter again, and it's @AJPBradley. We'll be back next week. But until then, I've been Alan Bradley.
I've been Andrew Clues.
And safe motoring.